Drop a line and catch some fresh fish. It's more of Go Fish with Mike Buck. Brought to you by POP Fishing and Marine at Pier 38 in Honolulu's Fishing Village. Right here on AM 690 KHNR.
Okay, welcome back. You know, I often talk to our next guest. As a matter of fact, he's been, ever since the console picked up sponsorship of our program, for which we are eternally grateful. He's been one of our regular guests because what he does is so key and so integral into what we talk about all the time with the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. And that's the way the structure is. You know, it's very rare in this day and age when everything is top down, is something is bottom up. And that's really what this council is. And I'm not sure that our next guest would even be on the council if it weren't set up that way. And I know that I am so pleased to be a part of what they do, because I genuinely feel this, because I get to talk to all the people, all the stakeholders, all over the Pacific. And today, Charlie Ka'ai'ai, who is his actual title, is Indigenous Program Coordinator. And that might make you think, well, he's going to teach Hawaiians how to fish. It's the other way around. We kind of learn from the Hawaiians, Charlie, how to fish, right?
Yeah.
In other words, you're not teaching indigenous Hawaiians. You're learning from them.
Learning from them. Yeah. I got so much more to learn,
too. Yeah. And what an interesting thing that is. And I'll tell you what it is. I don't think people understand. I think we covered this in programs past. Before contact, before the Captain Cook and the boys came here, there were as many Hawaiians in Hawaii as we have right now in Hawaii.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. The estimates are 800,000 to 1.2 million that were here when Cook arrived.
And they had no roads, no roads. Power companies,
no
sewage,
no.
You know, and yet they made it, right?
Yeah. They made it. No imports.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the other thing. They either grew or caught what they ate.
Right. Right.
And basically that protein we've learned, but before they brought in the cows and all that stuff and dogs and everything else, was fish.
Was fish, yeah.
You know, so the rest should be simple.
Yeah.
Take a look at their history books and do what they did.
Yeah, I mean, they had a way of doing it. They came with an oceanic culture.
Mm-hmm.
Hawaiians knew what they were going to do when they came here. And, you know, it's kind of like an experiment, right? But the experiments that didn't work, they're gone.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, because people didn't eat.
Yeah.
One thing that I noticed, because a long time ago when, you know, I was in grade school, we studied communism. And that's really bad. Communism is really, really bad. Well, it may be in politics really, really bad, but the communal form of management was pretty good for the Hawaiians.
Yeah.
Wasn't it communal, really?
It was really communal. For Hawaii, it was ahupua'a. We always hear about ahupua'a.
But top to the bottom, right?
Top to the bottom, and they managed the resources based on the ahupua'a. You go to Samoa and some of the other islands, and it's village-based, right? So the village is responsible for those resources and the ocean adjacent to their area.
Yep.
So they're responsible for taking care of that. That kind of guarantees that it's going to be healthy and guarantees that the community's needs are met.
You know what, Charlie? You'd have the opportunity to explain to this audience that in many parts of the Pacific, which is part of our council district, this exists. This still goes on today.
This still goes on,
I mean, almost uninterrupted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has. A lot of things have been uninterrupted. I think when Western culture
They couldn't grow spam.
They couldn't grow spam.
But everything else
they could. It was hard to get them in a can. But when the Western idea came, it was the idea of a centralized government. And what it did was it was able to come in and centralize the government and the control of all the resources and everything in one area. And like for Hawaii, we express the authority from Honolulu, right, to all the neighbor islands. And you can see, talking to the neighborhood communities, the island communities out there, that they're not happy sometimes with the central authority, right?
In some respects, you'd almost have to go back and learn history
about
how each island had its own king.
Yeah.
And within each island, sometimes there was more. In other words, a mountain might have separated two peoples.
Yeah.
And I look at it, I had the opportunity years ago to go to Papua New Guinea. And in Papua New Guinea, there are languages different. There's 700 languages.
700 languages.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. And from one valley to the other, they hate each other. They don't talk to each other, and they live by themselves.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I think today a lot of folks today don't understand is it was decided by Hawaiians a long time ago to centralize.
Right. Yeah, and there was that central government, but that central government also gave authority back to the communities
right.
in the form of Konohiki.
In the Konohiki rights yeah. and all of those things.
Yeah,
right.
Ali'i Moku and those.
Did a local Konohiki decision trump one from central? In other words, if they said, you can't catch Mempachi over here during October, would it trump?
You know, I think in the literature, it doesn't trump, but it wasn't challenged, mm-hmm. right? It was honored for the sake of that community, yeah. right?
Only because the decision-making process was probably for decades going on, well, this is how it's going to be, so right. here's the best plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so in that this works throughout the Pacific, I would imagine that some of the folks in the council, and we just went through the 162nd meeting, they come here, they're shocked at the way we live.
Yeah, you know, there's differences. We have council members from American Samoa, the Northern Mariana Islands, and Guam, mm-hmm. and we do things a little bit differently in each area. I think in all the areas, there's always that conflict between the centralized authority and then the village level. Mm-hmm. In Guam, each of the villages have a mayor.
Yep.
So there's like 20 some.
Yeah, a lot of mayors in Guam. It's a small place, by the way.
And small place, yeah. Yeah, and some of the mayors, their community is less than 1,000 people.
Yeah, so you take a look at it, it'd be like the Honolulu City Council, but not broken into population count areas.
Yeah.
The 9 districts here on Oahu are kind of, the district is determined by the number of people living there.
Right.
Sometimes your property is big, but there's, you know, few people in it. Yeah. Sometimes your property is small and there's plenty of people, and that's how they figure it out.
Yeah.
But there it's just chief of the valley, chief of the
right,
valley.
Yeah. This is the village. This is the village. It's always been here. This is the mayor of the village, right?
Yeah.
And for them to be able to manage their own resources in Guam, I mean, I think that's really positive for them. But with this central authority, you got to kind of do a compromise, right? The central authority is not going to be able to manage at the kind of fine level that the community can,
mm-hmm.
right? So they're going to have to make general rules, right, for everyone. But
In some respects, I want to say that's why it's so ironic that you're doing what you're doing in the council, because in a microcosm, that's exactly what's happening here. The feds want to make rules at work, but they also know that it's resented at the local level if the locals can't participate.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what I guess the attempt is now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what you really got to do is you got to get to the community. If you get people to agree to your rules right off mm-hmm. the bat, if they agree to the rules, in fact, if they make the rules,
mm-hmm.
then you get compliance. Easy compliance.
Now, this is where we're going to jump forward, gang, because now that you kind of get an idea what Charlie's realm of responsibility is, right now he's in a very key pivotal position because we have going on, whether we want to admit it or not, some real animosities between islands, between areas, and between fishermen on who gets to go where. And I'm not sure that maybe this coming to a head is not a bad idea, because I think it was unchecked for a long time. And now we have to sit back and take a look. But there's a lot of fears out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of fears. I think you might be referring to the conflict between the aquarium fishers in Kona.
Yeah, that's for sure, yeah.
Molokai, where they had those community members boarded a boat.
Right. And I'm also looking at the island of Niihau, trying to put a cocoon of protection around its resources.
Yeah.
If everybody did that, inter-island travel would become difficult, or fishing inter-island would be difficult.
So one of the ways I think you can address that is you get together with the community and you find out what the community thinks, and you come up with a compromise,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I mean, the world that we live in now, we have this idea of the commons where everybody owns everything, which kind of means nobody owns anything.
Nobody owns anything, yeah.
And then you have these people that have this dependence on that mm-hmm. resource. And I think you got to respect that dependence. I think we have to respect people's wanting to go places and be there, but you have to have rules, right?
I think, though, there's another set of variables that got introduced as a result of this 167 meeting. We're now finding out more and more that there's evidence to submit to believe that stock assessments can be done, and when they are done, it's going to determine what you can and cannot do to a place.
Right.
As far as take.
Right.
Now, when it comes down to, okay, you can take so many, but who gets to take them? Now that's in question, too.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that stock assessment forum that we did. I mean, that shows that the young kids are coming up, right?
By the way, Charlie and I were pleased to be in attendance last week at the Fishers Forum, which was part of this 167nd meeting of the council. And there were four different Wahinis that got up, all either with a doctoral or working on their thesis. Every one of them was to do with stock assessment, and none of them, I don't think any of them were from here.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing. Young Wahine that decided this is what they want to do, and they cut their teeth on a very difficult subject.
Yeah, they did. I think they did a good job.
I do too. They're all a great starting point.
Yeah.
And if they keep doing what they're doing with the refinements that they've learned and some of the input that they got from the community, these assessments are going to become more and more valuable.
Yeah, they are. And I think when you go to the community level, you need those stock assessments because in the old days, when the Konohiki saw that a stock was scarce, he could cut with that stock.
That's right. Just stopped it for
just
a while.
Just stop it. You know, you're not taking any more because we're running out.
Yeah.
If you saw there was lots of a certain kind of fish, big Akuli run this year, go out. Everybody grab
your
Akuli. Yeah. So there was a way to control it at that fine scale that I don't think central authority can control.
Well, one of the things that came up at the meeting, and I was almost nonplussed because I think that from the beginning, when you and I talked about the old way, that the gear was limited and the expertise was limited.
Right.
Now you're getting better gear and better fishing.
Right.
So whatever concept we had in the past, out the door. We got to figure out what's going on now.
Yeah. Because in the old days, too, I mean, if you were a fisherman, that was a profession, right?
Yeah.
And you fish and you fed the entire village. You fed the community.
So you were good. Yeah.
And you know, now with all of the gear and the technology and everything, everybody can be a good fisherman, you know? But then
everybody can catch a lot, whether they're good fishermen or not. Okay. It's a different thing.
Yeah, everybody can catch a lot, so we got to put it on ourselves and say, you know what? We're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. We're not going to use everything and catch everything. Yeah.
Well, when we were together last, and those of you remember, if Charlie's voice sounds familiar, we were just with Dr. Craig Severance, and Charlie and I were discussing the code of conduct, 9 points of a code of conduct that has been developed by the council. And to me, I thought, well, you know what? We can print this sucker and take it anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Because it's basic, basic stuff.
Right. And I hope it would encourage other people to come up with other codes of conduct that would be applicable to where they live. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned earlier, and let's talk about these areas one at a time. You mentioned earlier that we had a conflict recently between an environmentalist group trying to protect aquarium fishes on the Kohala coast of the Big Island and a diver who got angry at a person, lashed out, did something he shouldn't have done, was apologetic. But nonetheless, it called attention to something worth talking about, and that is, what is that industry? Is it sustainable? And can we have a meeting of the minds where we can agree to do certain taking, or maybe we can't take? Dilemma, right?
Yeah, it's a dilemma. I mean, and it would help to have a stock assessment
of those
fish that they're taking and see if the stock is good, if it's sustainable, what they're doing. I think it is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. And we have a permit system.
There's another thing. You mentioned the permit system. One of the many people inputting at the forum was this Hawaiian lady who's a fisherwoman and was complaining that a lot of the stock assessment is not visual.
Yeah.
Well, in the case of these Kona tropical fish guys, it pretty much is visual. Because they're jumping the water with their nets to catch a species. They're pretty able to discover an area that was loaded with this or loaded with that. So I think that their input's a little bit more valuable than a guy who's dropping damashi from a boat.
Yeah. You know? And I think that the fishermen really are resource conservationists because they don't want to pound an area and get all the fish out and then it's empty the next time. So a good fisherman is moving his area where he's going to fish, right, all the time and trying to conserve that stock.
Today you can go back to that spot with your GPS within 10 feet of something that you caught 5 years ago, right?
Yeah.
But the old Hawaiians, they had this great land, this system to mark their spot.
Yeah, they were trying
the third tree and this and that, you know, right?
Yeah. And these were like to identify koas, the koa is a naturally aggregating fish spots, I guess.
Yeah. Is this still practiced in other parts of the Pacific without electronics, or is everybody getting GPSs?
No, it's practice. In fact, even people here I know with GPSs just don't bother with the GPS.
Yeah.
Just kind of eyeball it and go. So,
well, I remember when they first put in the buoys.
Yeah.
Our buoy from Hawaii Kai and Kaneohe was T-buoy. And you hadn't made your bones unless you could find T-Boy. No, this is no GPS now.
Yeah.
And this was not following somebody who knew where it was.
Yeah.
This is go out on your own and find it. And it was, you know, because of the scope of the buoys, you could get within the area and then you could visibly see.
Yeah, you could visibly see.
But now you drive at it like a homing pigeon. That's another thing you're talking about, Charlie. The gear and the equipment has made an average fisherman a better fisherman.
A better fisherman, right. But if you become that better fisherman, then you should also be a better conservationist. Of your fish.
Okay, so let's talk about what this community-based fishery management plans are. And I know it's a massive undertaking. I would imagine that there's some goals that you set out. Hopefully they're realistic. And there's a timetable where we can effectuate some of this. Where will be some of the model places where it's already being looked at?
Well, you know, Hyena came in with a plan. We were kind of on the periphery of that and allowed it to go on.
Hyena, where you're talking about where?
On Kauai?
Yeah. In other words, this is what we're talking about earlier when we said the folks on Niihau were concerned about people coming over, commercial people coming over and taking all of a resource. I don't know if there's any evidence of that really happening, but it was suggested.
Yeah. And I think that's where I'm stuck, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen the films.
Yeah.
I don't know the people. I don't know if they're commercial fishermen. I don't know what they're doing, but I think that the Niihau people, their concerns should be considered.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And then we should go and find out what is really happening there.
Yep.
And get those, facilitate a meeting between those people and see if we can come up with some kind of compromise agreement like we used to have in the old days. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Leo Ojai is a good example of that, where he had an agreement with a community.
Hey, I can tell you, specifically to Leo Ojai, and he has been on the show in years past. What a wonderful guy this was. And we're really talking about Hanalei on the island of Kauai. And he used to go over there a couple times a year with his boat and his airplane and catch plenty of coolie.
Yeah.
But every single person on the beach got a tadai for their family.
Yeah.
Got a big bucket full.
Yeah.
And they welcomed this guy back because of what you said before. Sometimes that area had too many a coolie.
Yeah.
And it was eating all the limu and the uhu couldn't grow. You know, so or whatever. In other words, there was that relationship.
Yeah. And it's the old style of creating that relationship and sharing. Yeah. And I think what's happened is that people kind of can, with all the technology we have, you can kind of anonymously slide in there.
Yep.
Yeah. And you should really be making a contact with the people that live there and creating a relationship so that we can avoid the kind of conflicts that are coming out.
But back in the day, I had a partner and we had a very small kind of coolie operation.
Yeah.
And we used gill nets. And Leo Ojai used fence nets.
Yeah.
Because what Leo used to do is fence 50,000 pounds, he'd get him in there.
Yeah.
He'd scoop out what he needed, then he'd open the net. We saw, I'd say, what are you doing? He was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And he was misunderstood. There were a lot of people on Kauai specifically that really didn't like the appearance of that boat.
Yeah.
But later on, their neighbors would say, hey, you know what? This guy's been coming over here longer since before you were alive. Yeah. And look, there's plenty of fish.
Yeah. And the idea that he's catching all the fish that we should be able to catch from shore.
Yeah.
Don't know that.
No, I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, and yet, that entire type of fishing has gone away. I mean, you know, and maybe it's because of cost, or maybe it's because people just want more.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's the fence net is labor intensive.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So maybe people don't want to do it anymore.
But there is a good example, and Leo Ojai, by the way, he was the one down here at Pier 40 or something down there, or even further into the harbor, where that boat was very visible. His whole operation was very visible. And he never would not have time to spend with somebody that wanted to talk to him. He was a great guy for that.
He was always ready to have a conversation, tell you about what he's
doing. So that as a value, would that shine as an example of what can be done in other communities?
Yeah, I think so. One of the things that we found out when we did the Ahamoku Puvalu out there was that there were like five things that you really needed to do to have the community be able to manage their resources.
Such as?
You need rules, mm-hmm. regulations, right? And that, I think that's where we are now with the community-based management is, are these rules going to be recognized by the state? Right?
Yep.
You need a code of conduct.
Can we agree on these things?
Can we agree on these things? Are they going to conflict with other rules that we have? Mm-hmm. So all of those things. So you get the rules and regulations. You get a code of conduct, right? Mm-hmm. Then you get a education process, right? Community consultation. You got to keep going back to the community. The rules may change. Mm-hmm. The community's needs may change. And then you have criteria to participate.
Ah, okay. That's the magic number.
That's the magic
one. Who's going to get to be the players?
Who's going
to
be the players? Yeah. And for community base, it's going to be members of that community, mm-hmm. right? And if you come from a place where it's a central authority, then you figure, this is public commons. Mm-hmm. I'm the public, and I'm going to come in and I'm going to tell these people what I think should happen.
One guy said to me, he said, you know, when you guys get together and talk about this and get it on the show, let's talk about the difference in methods. Okay, this guy says, I can totally understand if guys from Oahu load up, you know, with 50 pieces of gill net and go over to Molokai and scoop up everything. But what about somebody that just goes trolling? How can we blame somebody that just goes trolling for, can they really impact a fishery? Can one boat trolling with lures impact a fishery? Or can 100 boats with lures do that?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what the impact of the line is, but I do know that there are additional collateral kind of impacts using nets, mm-hmm. Bottom structure changes, and how the fish are caught. Yep. There's pie net. There's all kinds of nets. I think that if we were to go back traditionally, the most efficient way was what they did.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
To catch as many fish as you can to feed the community and then stop.
Yeah, you see, one would say before, if they were using hook and line, for instance, if they could catch enough to feed the village, that's what they did.
Yeah.
When they start not being able to hook as many, they had to either make a trap or make a fish pond or do something to increase the demand. And by the time before white man came or Cook and them came, isn't it amazing if you take a look around the remaining the fish ponds that they worked out a system that if they were still in effect today, we wouldn't have any fish problems.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, I mean, seriously.
We kind of lost, you know, when we lost 95% of the population. Yeah. We kind of lost some of the knowledge.
Well, the pressure was off.
Yeah.
You know, not as much. You don't have to go fishing as often.
Yeah.
That's why I so admire what's going on out there in Kaneohe right now with this rebirth of the Heia fish pond. What a wonderful example.
Yeah. And one of the things that they did out there was they got the community involved.
Yep.
And so once the community agreed that this is what they wanted as part of their community, they had the support, they had the kind of a unwritten code of conduct of how you're going to act when you're at the fish pond, and all of this is going on. I think it's worked for the better.
What caused the concern and then the observation by the council to look into this, to make this a very important, viable part of the council, and to come up with a plan with some guidelines, with some goals in mind?
Well, about 5 years ago, we put in the fishery ecosystem plans. And part of the fishery, and that was the completion of a long process to develop this ecosystem-based mm-hmm. management that we came up with. And part of the battle to get to this ecosystem-based management was the idea that people are part of the ecosystem,
mm-hmm.
that the community should be considered because they're part of the ecosystem. And there was a kind of an uphill battle because I think a lot of the regulators elsewhere didn't want humans to be part of the ecosystem.
Good
they wanted
point.
To look at a pristine ecosystem with no humans, and that would be where we would aspire.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, the council, it was always, we have people living in the ecosystem. They're impacting the ecosystem. They're part of the ecosystem.
Yeah. There are going to be some people that consider themselves to be adversely or negatively impacted
mm-hmm.
if we come across with this sort of program. And I'm sure that they're going to be reached out to. I didn't get that sense at the last Fishers Forum, but that's because we weren't talking about limiting or laying the hammer down. That is going to have to happen at some point in time. In other words, there are going to be, like you said earlier, some compromises have to be made.
Yeah, some compromises will have to be made. We live in a different system. We have the tools from the old system. It's basically the same tools that we have now to manage.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Restriction, gear control. Bag limits, they're all the same tools, right?
But you know,
how we apply them.
The thing is, if you can take a look at, and we often reflect, Charlie, on how many things the longline fleet in Hawaii does to participate in, mm-hmm. in the solution rather than cause a problem, that every time you turn around and say, well, we've reached the max, we have no idea what technology's next step is.
No,
right now, I saw the thing the other day, and I brought this to the meeting. I didn't get a chance to bring it up, where a guy was fishing with a drone. Okay, he's flying out with a drone, looking with a camera from the shore where the fish is, and then another drone that has a hook on it goes out and catches the fish. what's that all about?
Yeah.
So but still the bottom line is, the council is devoting a tremendous amount of effort in this area. So obviously you have your sights on some good solutions, on some programs.
Yes,
what sort of, once again, I want to go back to what sort of maybe particular area can we have a model of? You said Hyena. Is that a good one to start at?
That was one we weren't involved with. One that we were involved with, it was on Guam. And okay. That's the village of Maleso.
Okay.
And we have this kind of phased-in program for community-based management. And the first thing we need to do is find out what that community wants and, mm-hmm. and what they see as a problem. And then we go through this process of defining that and getting it nailed down, getting agreement by the community.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to the regulations and the laws that exist in Guam. And yeah. we see how can these needs be taken care of within the regulations that exist.
Yep.
Then we get together, we facilitate a meeting with the community and that agency that's responsible for that and try to come up with a solution. If we can't find it, then we go another route.
Yeah, back to the drawing board. Talk again.
Back to the drawing board, yeah. And we try and get those communities' needs and their concerns addressed within that plan. And when we do this, we develop what is a process for them to solve their ecosystem.
Yeah, now that's what I'm looking forward to. In other words, the final product is going to be a model that we can come back and say, okay, Guyang, look, those of you that think that all of these neighbor islands, I mean, these Pacific islands are taking from us. Here's something they're giving to us, something that works. Now, how can we make it work here?
Yeah. I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult. I think that Oahu will be kind of difficult because of the size of the population. But we already have in place something like that that can manage. We have the neighborhood boards here.
Yep.
Right? On the neighbor islands, you have counties and you have communities, very, very strong, cohesive communities. Yeah, on the neighbor islands.
Yeah, this is another thing we can learn, you folks on Oahu, from our neighbor islanders. They're more likely to come up with solutions for some of this than we are. You see, now, so, but the bottom line also is, and this we can address because I know throughout the year there are going to be a bunch of talk stories in the communities. Now, in the past, the last few go-arounds, the attendance has been somewhat flat. In other words, not as much involvement as we need, I think. Once people find out that there's regulations coming and that they need real viable input, that we're likely to get better attendance some of these things.
I hope.
And what about next month? There's a forum next month, right? In June.
In June. I don't think we've decided on what the forum will be.
But there's another Fishers forum then, which will give people. I was very, very pleased last week to see some new faces.
Yeah.
And quite a few.
Yeah.
That's because we were talking about Uhu, Kumu, and Kona Crab,
right,
which we'd never talked about before, right?
I think a lot of the comments were very interesting that came out that when we created regulations for Kona Crab and Uhu Size, that people didn't really understand what those regulations were supposed to address.
Yeah, and one neat story was that a lot of people didn't know until that night that the female Kona Crab gets a lot larger than the male.
Yeah.
And so when you don't take females and they get really large, the males have a tough time mating with them.
Right, because the males got to pull them out of the sand.
Which was like, auntie's having a hard time getting auntie out of the sand, right? But I still think that, we had a chance to do that and a chance to really talk story. I hope people, Charlie, will go to the website and search out some of the valuable things that are there at the council site. Yeah. I find it fascinating, not only because they're a sponsor, and I got to know what you guys are doing.
Yeah, and well,
but it's fun.
And we gotta and we really gotta make an effort to make it so that it's easier to understand. We get so caught up in the bureaucraties and the scientific terms that we really gotta make our information more palatable for the general public, easier to understand.
Yeah, and I also think that most of us out in the general public are knee jerk. We something happens today, we want to fix tomorrow. Yeah. You guys are tasked with looking down the road. So I know that this whole concept of community based fishery management plans. If we could pull it together and make it work within a couple of decades, we'd be ahead of the game.
Oh, I think we'd be way ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still working in Fiji and these other places, and it seems to be working well, and it's a good way for poor communities to get economic development. There's all kinds of things that can come out of this kind of community.
You mentioned the places change. Yeah. We're looking right now at a lot of people looking at Waikiki Beach, saying, okay, we got to do this, we got to do that to maintain this beach. And then a couple guys are coming up and say, well, you got to be careful. Because the fish population is dependent on things changing out there.
Yeah.
And when you make it fixed, it don't change anymore. Yeah. Isn't Waikiki or the entire bay a pretty good example of how management can work? Because in that year of kapu, that when you go back the next year, there's plenty of fish. Unfortunately, they only last for a day.
Yeah.
But they're there.
Well, the idea of kapu can work. I think we need to study Waikiki a lot more. And is a kapu long enough? Is it too short? Is it necessary? One of the things that we did in Waikiki was we put sand.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that took out all the coral reef.
Yeah, right? All of the little coral guys gone.
All the little niches that existed there when the streams all came down and emptied into mm-hmm. Waikiki, right?
Which was nutrients, right?
Right.
Little animals would eat them up. They would grow. Other animals would eat them.
Yep. And then we covered it with sand. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the purpose of that is now we have a nice tourist area. People come for the beach and everything. Yep. But what happened to the people that lived off of there?
Right? Yeah, dead coral, no more squid. I remember when the Beach Boys, when it was slow in Waikiki, no tourists, they go out and get a bunch of squid.
Yeah.
Harder to find them, I think.
Now. Yeah, I think it's real hard to find now.
So, you know, but still yet, I still want to get an idea, Charlie, best case scenario, that we are able to really look each other in the eyeballs and talk about this stuff. I think that the days of pulling the wool over each other's eyes, they got to be over.
Yeah. And we got to sit down and we got to talk. Everybody's got to sit down at the table. We got to talk about what do we want Hawaii to look like, you know? Do we want to have people to be able to feed themselves out of our ocean? Do we want just tourism? Do we want just hotels? Do we want people to have nice neighborhoods? We got to all sit down and talk about it.
Oh, do we want it all? We want it all.
We want it all.
Hey, thanks a lot, Charlie.
Sure.
Okay, that's Charlie Kaiai from the WPCouncil.org. And go look at what he does. He's involved. He's the Indigenous Program Coordinator. And there's lots of other folks there. Check them all out. And if you need a speaker, check out the Speakers Bureau button. Especially at a school or a church or a community organization, you want to know the scoop, have these folks come out and talk to us. Good catch up on that shark stuff. And remember, if you want to hear something on the program, it's pretty easy. Just drop me a line, themikebuckshow@AOL.com. themikebuckshow@AOL.com. And if you need a link to this or any other segment, you want a copy of it digitally, we can arrange that for you. So for everybody here at GoFish, thanks for being here. See you next time. Aloha.